VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, the November 3rd, 2020 election is a contentious one. Never have we seen the allegations of fraud to this level. There's grave concern over dead people requesting mail-in ballots and voting. Stacks of pristine ballots as if never touched by human hands being run through the tabulation process. The curing of ballots that were flawed. Signature requirements disregarded. Photo ID requirements disregarded. Ballot security protocols disregarded. Signature verification requirements thrown out the window. Massive voter dumps, software scrutiny, and the list goes on. And just a short while ago, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals granted the Trump's campaign request for an expedited review of a lower court's decision to dismiss a lawsuit over voting in Pennsylvania. Ken Blackwell, who is the former Secretary of State of Ohio, now a distinguished fellow for human rights and constitutional governance at the Family Research Council, calls this the greatest election heist in American history. Joining us today, we welcome back constitutional attorney Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Council. Matt, good to have you with us today.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Jim.
Just before we revisit the November 3rd election, Matt, last Friday you had a victory in Florida as the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit gave a ruling on this therapy for unwanted sexual attractions. They're saying it violated the First Amendment of the Constitution. This is often referred to in the press, in ordinances by LGBT activist groups as conversion therapy.
Yeah, and of course that's not a counseling term because it's not ever used in counseling, but it's a political term used by these LGBT activists, and the media just keeps on repeating it. But this is a great decision. It's the first of its kind in the country. It strikes down in Florida, but this governs Florida, Georgia, and Alabama as binding precedent, and it's very strong precedent across the country. But it strikes down these laws that say that a client can't receive, nor can a counselor give a client at the client's request, any counsel to change unwanted same-sex attractions, behaviors, or gender conflicts. And these counselors, they can only go one way. They can counsel them to take hormones of the opposite sex. They can counsel them to go through risky surgery to remove healthy body parts, but they can't counsel them to be content with the birth sex in which they were born.
Outrageous.
Outrageous. And so this court, 2-1, very strong decision. It has already sent shockwaves around the country. And by the way, this goes to the presidential election. It was a 2-1 decision. The two people in the majority with a very strong, well-reasoned opinion, it's just full of great quotes, are appointed by President Donald Trump. The person in the dissent, appointed by Barack Obama. So that should tell you a lot of things. President Trump has, unlike any previous Republican president, has chosen judges that are constitutionalist, that are more going to be committed to the original intent of the text or the Constitution. It makes a big, big difference. And Obama, on the other hand, appointed ideologues that were judicial activists, and we see that every day as we litigate across the country.
Matt, has this issue of this counseling reached this level before any other circuit court?
Yes. In fact, it started off in 2012 in California, and we litigated the very first case there. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the law there, and that's what opened up the floodgates around the country. They created this new category that they said is professional speech. We said there is no such thing, and that they said it's not entitled to the same level of protection. And then New Jersey passed it, and Governor Chris Christie signed it into law. And so we litigated in that circuit, the Third Circuit, and they disagreed with the California court, but they upheld it under professional speech, that it's not entitled to the same level of protection. We said there's no such thing. And that's how these laws started passing around the country. There's 18 states in the District of Columbia and about 60 to 70 local jurisdictions that have these laws. And last 2 years ago, in the case out of California involving the crisis pregnancy centers, we had a case there. California was trying to tell crisis pregnancy centers you had to promote adoption, or abortion, I should say. You had to promote abortion in all your publications, tell people where they could go get an abortion. And California ultimately argued that at the U.S. Supreme Court, saying, this is professional speech. These are licensed counselors. It's like the court decision out of the Ninth Circuit, out of California, that these are licensed counselors and they're not entitled to the same level of protection. And the Supreme Court, 2018, in the NIFLA decision, said no. There is no such thing as professional speech category for less protection. We overrule those two cases. And those were two of our cases. I was never so happy to have two of our cases overruled. And now we're litigating across the country at various circuits. This is the first case ever striking down these laws, and it's the first case certainly since the 2018 Supreme Court decision.
So there's conflict now between the appellate court levels.
Absolutely.
Which means?
Which means, you know, we won, so we can't ask the Supreme Court to take the case. So it's up to Palm Beach County or the Boca Raton City to ask the Supreme Court. I actually hope they do, because we will win this at the Supreme Court. But we're litigating in other places as well. So we've got our win now.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have a loss someplace else, then we'll be the one to take it up. But we will litigate until we get one to the Supreme Court and strike these down around the country. Mm-hmm. As I said last Friday, Jim, this is the beginning of the end of these unconstitutional, damaging laws that ban change counsel.
Yeah, praise the Lord for that victory. And folks continue to be praying for Matt and the team at Liberty Counsel as they continue these litigations. We have seen it. It's hit our community of Milwaukee. It's hit the whole states and communities across this nation. And so be praying for them. And indeed that the U.S. Supreme Court would take up and give victory for counselors in such regard. We're going to turn our attention right now to the election. Matt, quoted the former state Secretary of State for Ohio, Ken Blackwell. I'm confident you know him.
Yeah.
He called this most recent election the greatest election heist in American history. Do you agree or disagree?
I absolutely agree with him. I mean, there are so many specific things that we know directly, and there's hundreds of affidavits that are sworn under oath that have the same template across these different states, and the same thing happened. So there was a coordinated effort, both in the computer side of things to manipulate votes, but also in these precincts around the country to change the votes and to ultimately drop off after hours bucket loads, garbage can loads of so-called ballots that didn't even have envelopes, so there was no security on them at all, and then counted them miraculously, bringing Joe Biden from an insurmountable difference to being in the lead in some of these swing states. So that just is unprecedented. I fully agree with what Ken said.
Yesterday we heard from President Trump's legal team that Sidney Powell, not a part of the legal team. Should that be a concern to those who have been hoping for some kind of overturn from what many have called, you know, the presumed outcome of this election?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think that frees her up to be able to kind of run independently, and they ultimately both have the same goal, and that is the goal of revealing the fraud and stopping the fraud of this election. That's President Trump. That's his goal with his legal team. That's Sidney Powell's goal with the legal team. They're taking a couple of different avenues, so I think it actually is a good thing rather than a bad one.
Let's talk about this Dominion voting systems. I know there have been numerous accusations launched against them. Representatives from Dominion voting systems, they were to show up at an oversight hearing in Pennsylvania last Friday, backed out. The Republican who chairs this committee said during a press conference, Seth Grove is his name, he said Dominion voting systems lawyered up and backed out of their commitments. Any idea what's going on there?
Yeah, I don't think they want to face the music. I mean, imagine this. This is a company that was being used and contracted with. Their software was used. Their machines were used for this vote counting. And they're not going to answer questions when there are serious allegations of voter fraud and manipulation in the computers. That is just outrageous. And that alone, my goodness, any responsible media would be all over this story, because that is itself a story. Why do they not want to answer questions? Why do they want to lawyer up? If there's nothing to hide, just go forth and answer these questions.
It's also reported that Dominion employees have been shutting down their LinkedIn professional pages. That looks a little suspicious.
Yeah, I think so. And you have some Dominion employees, the CEO, who is associated with George Soros's Open Society. They've had some very, very negative comments about President Trump before this election. I have in my possession a sworn affidavit of November 15. This person now lives in the United States, and he was present in Venezuela with Hugo Chavez when Smartmatic was ultimately created and deployed in the Venezuelan elections. He personally has observed, and I've got the affidavit right in front of me, the system actually changing votes real time, both for Hugo Chavez, but also for Maduro when he was losing by a significant margin. Sounds familiar. And at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there was an order to shut down the live reporting system. They reprogrammed the system, went back online, and by the end of the reporting, Maduro squeaked out a victory by 200,000 votes because of the machine changing the votes real time. This man was actually part of it. Now, why Smartmatic? Well, Smartmatic ultimately asked Dominion to come into the Philippines and help with the election there. The Philippines in 2009 contracted with Smartmatic, and Smartmatic software went in there, and Dominion came in there to work with Smartmatic. The Manila Times, as a result of that, says this. It says that only the truly uninformed would still find Smartmatic's combination, and it gives some numbers here or letters, an acceptable solution to the automation of Philippines' election, noting that the, quote, glitches, close quote, and the lack of transparency convinced us that of the system's unreliability and its vulnerability to tampering. That's from the Manila Times.
Wow.
And that goes back to 2009. Now, what happened is that's how Dominion found the connection with Smartmatic. And what they did is they stole the software from Smartmatic, reportedly, and used it in their own operating system, and that is the reason why in 2012 Smartmatic sued Dominion, claiming that Dominion had stole significant amounts of its technology and implemented it in its own software. So that now brings us to the United States, and according to Dominion, 40% of U.S. voters in 28 states and Puerto Rico used the Dominion voting system in this 2020 presidential election.
An election where Texas refused to allow the system to be utilized.
Yeah, not once, but twice. And the reason they refused it is because they knew the history of Dominion and Smartmatic, and they said, no, this is vulnerable for fraud. We're not going to have anything to do with it. And so they turned it down more than once, and yet now 40% of the U.S. voters in 28 states, they voted through these Dominion voting system machines, and that's the 2020 election. And lo and behold, we have them being used in these states that are contested right now.
Yeah, yeah. And folks, Pamela Geller is just reporting as well that Mikhail Garrett, that's a former Dominion project manager, goes by the name of Kelly Garrett, is the mayor of Lathrop Village, Michigan. Conveniently left Dominion in 2019, she reports. They become involved heavily in Michigan politics. Any connection? I don't have an answer to that, but we'll let you think about that. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in 1 minute here on Crosstalk. Matt Staver is our guest from Liberty Council. Their website, lc.org. That's LC for Liberty Council, lc.org. Back in a minute.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and author at the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, can we see any other galaxies with the naked eye?
Yes, we can, Chris. We can see a few stars that seem somewhat fuzzy. With telescopes, we see that these fuzzy stars are really galaxies, each containing billions of stars. And with super telescopes, we can see billions and billions of galaxies. The universe seems to have no end. And that's what we read in Scripture. Jeremiah mentioned that the host of heaven cannot be numbered. Yet scholars were certain there was only about 3,000 stars. Looks like the Bible was right and the scholars were wrong. I suspect that that's true even today. Those who claim it all happened by a big bang are wrong. It's the back of Genesis truth of creation which stands the test of science.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Was this a stolen election? Well, we're talking about that issue today. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel. As we mentioned, Ken Blackwell, the former Secretary of State of Ohio, now with Family Research Council, called this the greatest election heist in American history. Matt, Pennsylvania, they are right now calling for an election audit. We know that virtually all Republican legislators were in favor of calling for this audit. The vast majority of Democratic legislators were in opposition to this. And the Third Circuit also ruling here just earlier today, giving the Trump campaign a favorable ruling for an expedited review of a lower court decision to dismiss the lawsuit.
Yeah, I think all of that is good news. But, you know, you have to go to the Pennsylvania legislature first. Why would anyone vote against an audit? I mean, elections are fundamental to our freedom, and it's the foundation of every free society. And we ought to have very high level of confidence in the elections. Anybody that votes against it, partisan or not, I mean, that's just unconscionable. You ought to be open to looking at and evaluating, are these votes right? But not only counting illegal votes, because you've got to make a distinction between what's legal and what's illegal. We know, for example, in Antrim County, Pennsylvania, the Dominion software program was used, and it switched 6,000 votes for President Trump to Biden. Now, that was actually found after the fact by some manual review, and they changed it so that it would go to President Trump as opposed to Biden. And they called that, quote, a glitch, close quote. Well, that's what they were calling it in the Philippines, and that's why the Manila Times uses it in the word quotes, quote, glitches. They were blaming it on computer glitches. That's not a computer glitch. Computers don't just, you know, switch 6,000 votes from one candidate to another.
Right.
There's something going on inside the computer program to do that.
Matt, I know also lots of inconsistencies in Pennsylvania, but even in Georgia, they did a recount. And yes, he gave more votes to President Trump, but not enough. But this past Saturday now, President Trump is indicating, he says, I want a recount that includes signature matching. Why is this important?
Well, let me tell you why it's important, and it's why Wayne County in Michigan, which includes Detroit, refused to certify the vote because of the substantial fraud that they have seen. And let me give you an example. When a voter's name could not be found, this is what they found in Wayne County and particularly Detroit. When a voter's name could not be found, somebody's name could not be found, whether it's on a mail-in ballot or anything, and primarily these mail-in ballots, the election worker assigned that ballot a random name of somebody else and processed it. And that's why you have 17,000 people actually showing up to vote, and they were told, oh, I'm sorry, you already voted. Why? Because their name had been randomly selected or used by somebody else to validate some other ballot that was not validated. They also had election workers, they were, and these are in many affidavits, they were instructed to not verify the signatures on the absentee ballot, to backdate and process them even if they were not valid. And we also know that after the last absentee ballots were received, tens of thousands more arrived at the TCF Center unsecured and without envelopes.
Mm.
Every ballot was attributed only to the Democratic candidates. And so we have all of this information throughout Michigan, and it's the same thing why President Trump wants to see the signatures. You need to be able to look at the signatures to find out if it's actually valid or not. We also know in, for example, Michigan, and it seems to be a coordinated effort around the country, that election workers were instructed to falsely report late on secured ballots. They were also instructed to urge people to vote for a straight Democratic ticket, and they would actually stand by the people voting, urging them to vote for the Democratic ticket and show them how to do so. You have poll watchers that were banned. I know one of our attorneys was prohibited from being, and he's an authorized poll watcher. I should say an observer of the counts. He was an authorized observer of the campaign in Philadelphia, and they banned him, and they banned every observer of the Pennsylvania GOP or the Trump campaign to come in and observe the vote count. That's why just counting votes is one thing. But if they're illegal votes, you're just counting illegal votes. So you need to be able to verify, are these votes legal or not, and then you do your counting.
Matt, there's another concern, and that is when a ballot leaves an envelope, you can no longer match the two up with one another. And so, therefore, if you've got bad envelopes that you know, a bad signature or signatures don't match, or a witness address or witness name is not there as law requires them to be, how can one actually go back and rectify a situation in which these have been separated?
Well, that's a real problem, Jim, because you have to have that envelope to be able to match that. And what some of these have done, like, for example, in Michigan, where I was talking about, some of these were brought in garbage cans with no envelope, and they were just dumped and counted after the polls, long after the polls closed. And it seemed as though they realized Biden was behind by a substantial amount, so they just dumped in their 11th-hour fail-safe program to dump in these invalid ballots. So that's going to be a real problem in any of these states, Georgia and elsewhere, to verify that. But I think that's what is necessary, is to verify these signatures. That's the only way you can do this. And for people who don't understand the difference between absentee voting and mail-in voting, it's a big difference.
Right.
For absentee, you have to affirmatively apply for that. And then if you meet the criteria for absentee, they'll send you the ballot. And then you vote, and the envelope has your signature over the folded part, so they can compare that. And that's how it happens. But for the mail-in, you just get these ballots sent out to people that don't request it. You don't know, number one, whether they've gotten it. You don't know whether they've gotten more than one. And we've gotten a lot of people that say they got more than one absentee ballot. They got them for dead people in their home that had been dead for many years in their family. You don't know whether the post office is not sending them out to Republicans, or the person who's delivering the mail sees a Trump sign in your yard and he's not going to drop off that mail-in ballot. They are fraught with fraud. And if you go back to 2005, there was a bipartisan commission chaired by former President Jimmy Carter. And in that commission, it said that mail-in ballots are fraught with fraud and they raise significant concerns. Even the New York Times in 2012 issued an article and said the same thing about the mail-in ballots being very like a playground for fraud.
Yeah, matter of fact, I think it was called the Carter-Baker Report.
Right, yeah, it was Jim Baker, who was that's where you get the bipartisan for the Republican side and Jimmy Carter for the Democrats. And it was released by those two people. They were the chairs, and that was the commission, and that was their conclusion.
And as a matter of fact, their main 7 points from their commission. And, Matt, had those points been put into action, we would have averted the problems that we're seeing right now in the 2020 election.
Yeah, we would have. And, you know, up until the time of 2020, when the Democrats decided there was a way that they could cheat in this election through these mail-in ballots in addition to this software program, and they wanted to use the COVID lockdowns as an excuse for it, this would be a way to ultimately defeat Trump. Then when Trump came out and said this is fraught with fraud, you know, everybody else from the New York Times and the Bipartisan Commission all would have agreed. But now they say, oh, no, Trump was exaggerating. Well, no, he was exactly right.
Right.
He was exactly right. There was no reason to do this mail-in ballot. In fact, we were in Pennsylvania, and one of our attorneys out of our D.C. office was an authorized observer, as I mentioned, but he was in a different county, Berks County. The commissioner there was angry about this mail-in ballot. He said they had a local election earlier. They could have tested it if they wanted to do it. They could test it on an off-year election. He said he was so upset and mad that Pennsylvania went to this mail-in ballot in a presidential election.
Yeah. Matt, this past Thursday, Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani, he had a press conference He, along with others, pointing out the issues, in essence, like an opening argument to the American people and also to the media. It was an indictment of the media. They many times call them the fake media who are not going to tell the story.
Right.
But in that, they often referred to the multiplicity of sworn affidavits that they had received on so many issues. And I think this is important. There are people who are willing to go to jail on the sake of their testimony that they wrote in these sworn affidavits.
Yeah, I've got some of those sworn affidavits. I don't have hundreds of them, but I know that there's hundreds of them. And I have some of them. And I have the one that I was telling you earlier about the person who was there when Smartmatic ultimately changed the votes and was developed in Venezuela, and it was exported to other countries, the Philippines, other Latin American countries, and then found its way into the United States. And I also have other affidavits as well. I have an affidavit from one of our former attorneys who now is a law professor in Virginia, and she used to live in Michigan. And she found out that someone had registered her under her maiden name. And she hasn't lived in Michigan. She graduated from high school there, where she left when she was 17. And she obviously didn't register in the county to vote because she wasn't old enough. And she heard about people being registered in their maiden names, and lo and behold, she's registered as a Democrat in Michigan under her maiden name. She's not a Democrat. She's a Republican. She posted it on social media, and some of her classmates from high school also that no longer live in Michigan, one that lives on an Air Force base in Alaska, found out she also was registered in her maiden name as a Democrat in Michigan. Other female classmates that still live in Michigan were not so registered. So you see that they tried to find people who were women and no longer live in Michigan or vote there and register them under their maiden name so that they would never know about it. We also have in Pennsylvania individual personal research of 1,601 people in Pennsylvania from the years of 100 plus to 202 years of age, long since dead, some of them born in the late 1800s. And they're registered, but they're not only registered, they requested mail-in ballots.
Wow.
And most of them returned, Jim, the mail-in ballots in time for the 2020 election.
My. Contact Guinness. I mean, they've got to get some new updated entries in their book.
I know. The oldest people in the world. They've missed the oldest people in the world.
Yeah. WND.com reported, Matt, that Republican Maryland Governor Larry Hogan advised President Trump yesterday, stop golfing, concede. Concede the election to Joe Biden. Is it time for President Trump to just give up and concede?
No. In fact, we were involved in the 2000 election. And that went on. We litigated for 5 weeks. The litigation didn't start the first week, but we litigated for 5 weeks. That vote was decided by 537 votes in Florida, particularly a couple of counties in Florida. And President, George W. Bush came out the winner by 537 votes. That changed the whole election. But that case involved lots of litigation in the state courts. It was only one state, but it went to the Florida Supreme Court, to the federal courts of appeal, all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And that decision from the U.S. Supreme Court was December 12, and Gore conceded on the next day, December 13. But Gore filed his last lawsuit. He filed many, but he continued to litigate, filing brand-new lawsuits even after Thanksgiving. His last lawsuit was filed on November 27, 2000, after Thanksgiving. So, you know, that is not the first contested election. It's the most recent.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had contested elections beginning with the very first one going back to 1800.
Let's come back to that after the break. Matt Stever with us from Liberty Counsel. And we've got a lot, folks. We're going to be talking yet about the 12th Amendment. How does that enter into our discussion today? There are also some that are calling for the abolition of the Electoral College. Why is the Electoral College important? We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
As the end of the age draws near, the signs of the times will be impossible to ignore. Millions of people will suddenly be reported missing. A new world superpower will eclipse the United States. A global economy. The Middle East crisis will finally appear to be resolved as a world leader comes on the scene. A rebuilt Jewish temple to be usurped by the Antichrist. The Bible indicates that these and several other startling events will lead up to the fulfillment of the greatest prophecy of all, the visible, physical, and triumphant return of Jesus Christ to the earth. In the book, 15 Future Events That Will Shake the World, Bible prophecy speaker Dr. Ed Heinsohn presents each of these events and how these events should impact people today. VCY America is offering one copy of the book for a donation of $16, or two copies for a donation of $25. To obtain yours, call 1-800-729-9829 and ask for 15 future events that will shake the world. That's 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, and Matt Staver is our guest today from Liberty Council, lc.org. lc.org is their website. And if you do need to be in contact with them, their number 407-875-1776. Matt, we were talking about, as I said, the Maryland governor just telling President Trump, go ahead, concede, get out the golf course, concede, time to move on. And you were telling us not only about the Bush-Gore election of the year 2000, but saying even that was not the first contested election. That goes way back, doesn't it?
Yeah, it goes way back to the year 1800. This was the famous election between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, which ultimately fractured the friendship for decades until they reconciled later in life. But Jefferson decided to kind of pick Aaron Burr as his running mate. And that's not how things actually worked back then, because you would have the House would choose the president in the event of the top vote getter, and then the number two person would become the vice president. But they decided to kind of like pick their so-called running mates. So Jefferson and Burr were on the same ticket, but Jefferson wanted to be president and he wanted Burr to be his vice president. He's running against John Adams, who also had somebody he was running with. So the people that were voting for him were supporting states' rights, and Adams was more of a federal rights person. And so they had an agreement for all of us that are going to vote for Thomas Jefferson. One of us needs to not vote for Aaron Burr. We need to get them number one and two so they become president, vice president, but we can't all vote for them, right? Because they'll be tied. One of us has to cast our vote for the other side or some other candidate. And what happened is they all forgot it, and they thought somebody else was going to do that. So they all voted, and guess what? Jefferson and Burr tied. Well, that was awkward. So how do they deal with that? The Constitution set up the process, and that means that the U.S. House ultimately chooses the president, and the number two becomes the vice president. Well, the House took 36 votes to finally decide between Jefferson and Burr as the president and vice president. So that's how Jefferson became president. That began the process of the 12th Amendment. They realized that the Constitution did not envision a tie. They didn't think that would happen. They never thought about it. So they created the 12th Amendment. It's complicated, but it was adopted in 1804. And essentially, what does this do? In the event that one of the candidates does not get a majority of the electoral votes, then the House kicks in through the 12th Amendment. And how that is ultimately decided is each state gets one vote. So all the delegations of Congress for each state, they'll get one vote. So the delegates from Virginia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida, they all get one vote. Delaware gets a vote. California gets a vote. And that's how they ultimately choose the next president if one of them does not get a majority. So if we're not finished with who is the president, that's how it works. It's not the current makeup of the House that votes. It's the fact that each state gets one vote, and so that's how it works. There's more Republican Republican states than there are Democratic states. So in that sense, it would lean toward President Trump. But that's assuming that nobody gets a majority of the electoral votes. Now, what is not clear is what does it mean by a majority of the electoral votes? There's 538 electoral votes. You need 270 for a majority. What if somebody has 265 and is in the lead of somebody who has 255, for example, but neither has 270? I think that's fairly clear. Or is it? You know, One of them has a majority, but they don't have a majority of all the votes of the Electoral College. In other words, is it just a majority, but it's less than the majority of all those who can vote? Or is it a majority of those who have been decided? And that is not decided or addressed in the 12th Amendment. That would be a legal question. So what you could have is some states that still are contested, and therefore nobody has the 270, but maybe one of them is leading over the other. I think the 12th Amendment kicks in, and then there's going to be a legal challenge as to what does that mean, not having a majority, when one actually has more, but they don't have the majority of all the electoral votes that are possible.
Matt, has the 12th Amendment ever been utilized before?
It's come close, but it's not had to be utilized quite like that. We've had other contested elections. We've had elections in 1825 and 1877. In 1825, the House ultimately chose John Quincy Adams over Andrew Jackson. In the 1877, Congress resolved the dispute by appointing a bipartisan commission, and Rutherford B. Hayes became the president. So we didn't have exactly the 12th Amendment kicking in, but it was very close, and it didn't come into play in 2000. But, you know, perhaps it could have if Florida was not something that was ultimately decided in time. Nobody would have had the majority of the electoral votes, and the 12th Amendment would be kicked in. Now, this, I say it hasn't been. I would say that the 12th Amendment has come in to effect and be used in the 1825 and 1877 elections, but it was really 1825. 1877 ultimately got resolved through this appointment of a bipartisan commission, and they never had to fully utilize the 12th Amendment there. So, yes, we have seen this out through history. The Constitution has a process, and here's the process, Jim. December 8, the electors meet. Now, December 14, they actually cast their ballots for president. Now, what happens if they don't have all the numbers decided by that? There's cases, litigation going on. Well, the House meets on January 3. This is the new House, and they look at what is certified thus far, and they have to just count the votes. And if there's no finality to it, then the 12th Amendment kicks in. If there is this ongoing uncertainty and no one has a majority, the 12th Amendment kicks in, and that's when you have each state get one vote. So you could have, obviously, the president get sworn in on January 21, 2021, but what happens if there's no final resolution by then? I would think that what you would have, if you don't have a final resolution of the votes on January 3, when the House certifies them, and there's still states that are under contention, then you would have the vote in time before January 21 of 2021. So it would likely be decided by then, but even if not, you know, there is a process that is in place for this all to be decided. So, you know, for people to say the election is over, President Trump should concede, no, this is part of the historic process that's already been provided in the Constitution, including the 12th Amendment, and we've been down this road before, beginning in 1800 with the first contested election.
Well, Matt, now there are some hearing what you're saying, and they're hearing from the Biden transition team right now, saying we're being hampered. We should have access to all the intelligence going on right now. We should know about the COVID-19 of, you know, distribution process as far as the vaccine is concerned. We need to know about all these things. There are going to be many people that will die if we don't start getting access as a transition team. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, well, you know, that's coming from the Biden transition team. And that's just a bunch of nonsense. You know, obviously, if there's no affirmed president-elect, then there is no reason for him to have access to all of that information. And so the GSA, the government agency, rightly has said this is a contested election, and there is no president-elect at this point, so we're not going to turn over the keys to provide you resources to be able to begin this transition process because you're not the president-elect. I mean, mm-hmm. He can say he's the president-elect. He can go out and pretend that he's putting together his
team. He's got a logo.
Team. Yeah, and he has a, you know, fake logo, and the media can say all they want to, that there's nothing to see here, go on, concede. That's what they've been wanting to do 4 years ago, and this is just part of their media narrative, fake news. It's worse than Pravda was in the former Soviet Union, just a propaganda machine, and they want this to be President Biden, and they're wanting to call it. But you know what? I don't see anything in the Constitution where a candidate gets to make the decision about who's president-elect, and I don't see any mention of the media having any role in that at all.
Right. Matt, one other thing here, and that is coupled with this election are renewed calls to abolish the Electoral College. The Washington Post has an editorial that they just ran saying this: the Electoral College, whatever virtues it may have had for the founding fathers, is no longer tenable for American democracy. What's your response?
Well, that is just nonsense. I mean, the Electoral College actually gives a balance of power to the different states. Why do people go in and campaign in Iowa or Pennsylvania or Georgia or California, Wisconsin? Because of the Electoral College. But if you didn't have an Electoral College, who would be selecting the next president? California and New York. There's four states with the most population: California, New York, Florida, and Texas. The other states would be completely irrelevant. The campaigns would focus on those states, and they would choose your next president. So you would have Jim in Wisconsin, no voice in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people in various parts of the country would have no voice because it's just a popularity contest. And that is, you know, the founders rejected a pure democracy because throughout history, pure democracies do not work. Oftentimes we use the word democracy. We're a republic. We're a representative form of government. We have checks and balances. That's why we have two senators for every state, no matter how big or small. And then on the House level, you have representatives based on population.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the checks and balances. The Electoral College gives each state a voice in choosing their next election. How many of us want to be ruled by California? I surely do not.
Right. Matt, one last thing here, and by the way, let me open some phone lines. Folks, if you want to get through, have a question or a brief comment, our number 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Something else happened over this weekend. We have a rearranging of Supreme Court justices over the various circuits, the appellate court level. Why did this happen?
Well, this happened because Amy Coney Barrett replaced Ginsburg, so you had to naturally have it, and therefore you had to do some reassignments. And so Ginsburg, you know, I should say Barrett came from the Seventh Circuit, which is your part of the country, Jim,
right?
Wisconsin and those areas there, Illinois, so forth. And so that makes it natural for her to be over the Seventh Circuit, and that caused a redistribution of some of the judges. So now you've got Justice Clarence Thomas over the 11th Circuit. And you have Alito, he's continuing over the Third Circuit, which is Pennsylvania. That's where he came from, was the Third Circuit. And you also have Alito over the Fifth Circuit, which is the Texas, Louisiana area down in that area. So a little bit of rearranging. Kavanaugh was over the Seventh Circuit, and of course, he's now over the Eighth Circuit, and Coney Barrett is over the Seventh. So it's basically it's just because of this happening with the replacement of Barrett for Ginsburg. But it also is very good information for us because these justices, like I said, they're over those circuits. Like, we just filed an emergency injunction pending appeal in the California church case, and that goes out of the Ninth Circuit, so that's before Kagan. So they're the first one that gets that. They can make a decision or they can refer it to the full Supreme Court.
Our lines are packed. We'll come right back to your phone calls after the break. Matt Staver with us from LibertyCouncilLC.org. This is Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. My friends, the globalist, the communist, the Marxist, the internationalist, the statist, whatever you want to call them, the change agents, they have stolen America through a long march through the institutions. Just as we have been warning for years, as Herbert Marcuse said, they would do, the cultural Marxists, a long march through the institutions. And they've destroyed many of them. They've destroyed a trust by the American people in the institutions that have made America great and upheld our constitutional republic. They've destroyed institutions like the U.S. Congress, the FBI, the CIA, the military, our voting system, religious institutions, the legal system. They have put in people to destroy the credibility of these institutions. So the American people now, many of them don't even trust the vital institutions that they knew were on guard to defend the republic. And now we, the American people, don't trust those institutions. That's by design, folks. They're winning through their long march through the institutions.
Phone lines are packed here today on Crosstalk. We'll get right to your calls. As you hear somebody hang up, that'll be your opportunity to weigh in. Matt Staver with us today, lc.org, their website. Let's go to Terry calling first. Hi, Terry. You're on the air.
Two things. Without a revote with picture ID and validating everything, you'd have no idea how far the cheating went one way or the other, overvotes, undervotes, whatever. But can you imagine what would happen if after inauguration and Biden was in, then all this came about the Dominion and the everything else. But if that was then shown, how would you uninaugurate them if you had positive proof then that this massive cheating went on and the Trump margin of victory was way greater than it was last year? What would then happen then? Can you imagine a rioting that's going on in this country and then try to get them out?
Terry, thanks for raising that. Matt, your thoughts?
No, I agree with you. It's a real problematic problem. That's why it needs to get resolved before, but you know, if you don't get it resolved now, we're not going to have free elections anymore. I mean, we'll be like these third world countries or other countries like Venezuela, the Marxist countries, where elections are just a show and really your vote doesn't count.
Kevin in South Dakota, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Jim, I just appreciate your program, and Matt, all the work you do. You made a comment last week, Jim, very encouraging. It just seemed like it's depressing and overwhelming what's going on in the world, but other than God is sovereign, he reigns. It is encouraging to know some of the stuff that you were mentioning. And I guess one of the things I was thinking about is when we look at the province of Canada, being the whole, the whole nation of Canada, is the same population within maybe 1 million people of California. So what you're saying, the Electoral College is exactly right. We're going to take the size of California dictate the whole size of Canada.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just crazy. And the other thing of it is, I guess, I think we're thinking about this wrong on these votes when we see the difference between Biden and Trump. You know, if you have 10 votes and I have 10 votes and I take one away from you, it's one thing that was a legal vote of one vote. That makes me 10 and you're still, it makes me 11 or makes you 9 and I'm 10. But when with the legitimate one, take one away from me,
Yeah, that's right. No, you're right. You can see why these, very radical liberals want to get rid of the Electoral College, because they know that the two states will essentially control the country, and that's going to be New York and California.
Yeah. Thank you, Kevin. And the other thing I want to point out about Canada, and that is Canada was very quick to say, we're not using that Dominion voting system here, that Dominion software. So, very interesting. Nick is calling next. Hi, Nick. You're on the air.
Yes. Just one quick question, and I'll take my answer off the air. This morning, I was listening to what's supposed to be a pretty conservative radio station, WISN, on my way to work this morning.
Let's go right to your question, Nick.
Yes. The host said, was talking about Sidney Powell's transition, and seemed to be implying that Trump would be close to conceding now. Why do you think he would have said that?
Probably because he's not properly informed. I don't think that there's a chance of that at all. It's just not going. That's just not true, and that's not why this happened. So, yeah, the person was just misstating.
Thank you, Nick. Mark is next. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is my comment. I think the 2020 election could be easily renamed the Res election. Ironically, atheists who don't believe in the resurrection don't mind stealing votes from dead people. That's my comment.
Thank you for that. Julie in Pensacola, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My question is about Sidney Powell. I thought I heard this morning that she was taken off of the case completely, and if so, what is going on? Is she still in support for President Trump?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah, she's just not part of the President Trump's legal team.
She's not on the payroll for the Trump legal team.
She has her own mechanism to raise funds, and people have been supporting her effort, and she is still moving full steam ahead. Look, their end goal is the same way, and they both believe the same thing. This election was fraudulent, and it needs to be revealed, and it needs to be overturned so that we have a fair election. And that's both of their goals. So I think it actually frees her up so she's not under having to work in the president's campaign. It's like two different approaches to the same ultimate goal. So I don't think it's a negative thing. I think it's actually a good move.
Thank you for the call. Carrie is next. You're on the air, Carrie.
Hi, it's Karen, actually.
Karen, okay.
I wanted to mention Friday I was in Madison helping with the recount of the votes in Bain County. And Matt is absolutely right. Once the envelope is separated from the ballot, I objected to four envelopes. But the way that they take care of envelopes that they negate is to randomly pull out votes.
Mm.
So you could be dismissing two Trump votes,
mm-hmm.
Biden
right.
votes. And so it's really negating your own vote.
Yeah,
it is. So you've seen that firsthand, and we know that that's happening everywhere. And it's really ripe in some of these states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, other places around the country, just amazingly the states that have all this contested issues going on.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
And finally, in West Dallas, Brad, you're on the air.
Hey, Brother Jim. This receiving mail-in ballots from these municipalities who just send them out without request, isn't that against the law? You're supposed to request it, right?
In Wisconsin, it's the case. Different states have different rules.
Oh. Yeah, and so Pennsylvania, you got a very liberal Secretary of State, and George Soros has had a plan for many years to go to these states and put in his kind of Secretary of State so that they would change that process, and that's what Pennsylvania did, and that's how Pennsylvania did these mail-in ballots. And, you know, you look at the close on November 3rd. There's no way in the world that Biden could have made up hundreds of thousands of votes. Trump was trouncing him in the election returns. Then the polls close. Then all this mail dump happens. Then, lo and behold, he makes up hundreds of thousands of votes. That just doesn't happen, and that reeks of fraud.
Indeed. And Brad, with our theme music playing here in the close, I apologize. I know you had more to say, but we've run out of time. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. And Matt, I know you always have resources on your site on many issues. And if they have questions, they can also contact Liberty Council.
Yes, they can go to lc.org, and go to lc.org/voter fraud for more information.
lc.org/voter fraud. Matt, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, my pleasure.
Friends, don't give up. Remember, prayer did not stop for our country November 3rd. Keep the nation in your prayers. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.